Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, December 3rd, 2018. Sudan is asking South Sudan to pay millions of dollars in oil revenue.
It could have been paid by now, I would say, definitely. 6 years, you know, for the fields of Unity, which were producing close to 80,000 barrels a day, and Sargas as well. Scientific guess, I would say yes, this money would have been paid.
And health officials say the rate of HIV/AIDS infection in South Sudan is worrying.
Like specifically for last month, we tested around 1,143 with 105 positive. That means the average of 286 persons are seen on a weekly basis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government of Sudan says South Sudan still owes her millions of US dollars in financial assistance based on the terms of a cooperation agreement signed by Juba in Khartoum in 2012. The terms of the deal required Juba to pay Sudan $3 billion over a period of 3 years to compensate for lost oil revenues when South Sudan separated from Sudan. South Sudan's petroleum minister says his country will pay Sudan once oil production resumes to full capacity. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
According to the cooperation agreement, Juba was to pay Sudan $3 billion US dollars to compensate economic loss Sudan incurred following the secession of South Sudan in 2011. In an interview with South Sudan in Focus last month, Sudanese oil minister Mohamed Azari says Juba has paid some money to Sudan but has yet to honor the full terms of the 2012 cooperation agreement.
Partial payment has been completed, but the balance is not yet completed. And I don't have the figures with me. Though.
Azari says South Sudan's failure to pay the full $3 billion has affected Sudan's economy.
It could have been paid by now, I would say, definitely. 6 years, you know, for the fields of Unity, which were producing close to 80,000 barrels a day, and Sargas as well. Scientific guess, I would say yes, this money would have been paid, which actually has a negative impact on the economy of Sudan for sure.
South Sudan depends on Sudan for its oil processing and transfer to the international markets. The two countries agreed in 2012 that Sudan charges $15 per barrel for transporting Juba's crude oil to the international markets. Ezekiel Lodgathquot says South Sudan's five-year conflict, along with the other factors, have impacted oil production and prevented his government from paying Sudan on time.
In 2013, we had a crisis in the country, so the production dropped from 350,000 barrels a day to 130,000 barrels a day. So we have lost close to 220,000 barrels a day. That also created a gap not to finish the payment. The second one is the oil price. The oil price went down, and that's why at that time when we signed the agreement, it was $100 a barrel. But in 2014, 2015, 2016, the price went to even close to 24, 30 barrels a day. I mean a barrel. So we had that. These two incidences. That's why we did not pay off the money.
Gatkwath admits Juba still owes Sudan at least $1 billion US dollars and claims his country will pay Sudan once oil production resumes at some of the abundant oil fields during the conflict.
To me, this is not an issue. The issue is cooperation between Sudan and South Sudan is what will actually change all of this in oil, in trade, in different areas. Because the more we trade with Sudan, the more we will actually improve the economies of the two countries.
Agustino Ting Mayai, an economic analyst and a researcher with the Sud Institute, says while cooperation between the two countries would boost South Sudan's oil production, paying Sudan $1 billion presents a huge financial burden for South Sudan.
We're paying another country. We're broke. We would use this $1 billion for economic recovery. of South Sudan now that peace has been signed. We can pay for educational services, we can pay for health, we can pay for infrastructure. That money is going to go to Sudan and leaves a lot in terms of our ability to take care of our own obligations.
The 2012 cooperation agreement was signed to facilitate oil flow to the international markets and help boost the economies of both countries after the 2011 referendum, which resulted in South Sudan's independence. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Sudan's economy is not in a good shape, and the Washington-based Enough Project partly blames corruption and financial mismanagement for the country's economic problems. Sudan researcher at Enough Project, Suleiman Baldu, says the government should spend less money on security and fight corruption in Sudan.
And because of the neglect of the national resources and mismanagement of the economy, Sudan has consistently been importing goods from outside, you know, in the tune of $10 billion, but its exports, you know, value and revenue didn't exceed half that amount in average. So there is always, a tendency or a constant trade deficit in Sudan in the range of $4-5 billion over the last decade after the exit of oil from the revenue stream of the government of Sudan.
Now, I just want to talk about gold. Obviously, gold is one of Sudan's natural resources. Has the country used their gold to help the economy at all?
Unfortunately, for the government of Sudan, it does not own the mining and the production of gold the way it did with oil during the oil decade. The gold in Sudan is basically produced to the tune of 80% by artisanal miners. So there are traditional miners who operate in the deserts and savannas of Sudan and mining gold. Sudan gold production has, grown very rapidly from 40 tons in 2012 to an estimated, to some 105 tons, in 2017. This is about official figures. However, consistently, Sudan has been exporting officially only a percentage of that production because of mismanagement and wrong-headed policies that sought to buy gold from artisanal miners at a rate which is lower than the international market, or in local currencies that depreciates at a rapid pace. This has provided incentive for traditional, artisanal miners and the intermediary traders who buy gold from them to simply smuggle gold through unofficial channels to international markets, and particularly in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, and in Mumbai and Beirut and elsewhere.
Is Sudan on the verge of an economic collapse? And if so, how will it affect the region?
Well, sadly, Sudan could go on this state of, economic weakness, stumbling through, for several years because of the strong security control that the regime has on the country. But that would mean large suffering for the population, exodus of the population in migration and seeking, other places to make decent and acceptable living for themselves and their families. So Sudan will continue to suffer. It will weaken as a regional power to the benefit of countries that are serious about addressing their problems, such as Ethiopia and Rwanda in Central Africa and so on. So this is a fate that Sudan is going to face in the coming years.
That was Suleiman Baldo, senior policy advisor at the Enough Project, speaking to Ayin Bior from New Jersey today. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa has been closed for more than a week because of what embassy officials call a terrorist threat. VOA correspondent Anita Powell is in Kinshasa. She has been trying to find out details of the threat and how it might affect city and any U.S. government agencies that have been operating in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She spoke with our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson earlier today.
That's a great question, and one that not only have I posed to numerous officials, both American, Congolese, and otherwise, but one that the people of Kinshasa are asking. The U.S. Government has said officially very little. They've said that they've received a credible threat of terrorism, but they will not say who, they will not say what they're proposing to do, and they won't give any more details. And they are saying that they won't speak to the press today because the embassy is closed.
Are any other embassies or any Congolese government offices in the capital closed because of a terrorism threat?
Not to my knowledge, no. No other organizations appear to have reacted to this threat that the Americans are reporting. In fact, everything in Kinshasa today, I'm in central Kinshasa as we speak, looks like business as normal. There is not an abnormal security presence. There's not an abnormal police presence. And everything looks very, very normal, except people have heard of this threat and they are confused because there doesn't seem to be anything wrong.
What has the DRC government said?
So I spoke to the government spokesman earlier today, and the most he could tell me, the most he would tell me, is that the American government had not given the Congolese government any information on this threat. And that's a very interesting thing to say because this threat would affect infrastructure in Congo. It would ostensibly affect Congolese citizens, Congolese nationals, Congolese bystanders. And so it is very odd that the government does not know any details about this threat that the Americans say that they've received.
Now, at this point, what operations of the U.S. government are affected?
So right now, the embassy itself is closed. Embassy officials, press officials have been responsive in that they are working remotely. But as it stands right now, the embassy itself is closed. I drove by the embassy on Monday, and it appeared to be very, very quiet. The consular offices are closed. There are no queues outside the embassy. There does not appear to be, from what you can see from the outside, extra security or anything abnormal. But it does look very quiet, and there doesn't appear to be anything happening. And when you ask the press office, they say the embassy and its operations are closed.
So, Anita, how does this affect non-State Department activities, such as U.S. efforts to help with containing the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC, or any U.S. Efforts to monitor the election process in the DRC? Does the embassy closure affect those operations?
So the short answer to that is it's not entirely clear at this point. I've been in communication with the embassy, and they have told me that the CDC, for example, the Centers for Disease Control, is not available because of this embassy closure. So it appears it is affecting at least a few organs of U.S. government activities here. But it's really, really not clear at this time. And as I've said, we have no information.
That was VOA's correspondent Anita Powell reporting from Kinshasa. She was speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, medical professionals say the fight against AIDS in South Sudan must continue.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the daily work of women in your community?
Women in my community are mostly traders. They go out to the markets to buy and sell.
They work at home, fetching water, looking for the firewood, looking after goats, because that's our duty, and taking care of the kids and the food at home.
My community and Benue State, where I come from in Nigeria, our main occupation is farming. So, of course, women go to farm with their husbands, and some few women work in the government, and of course most of their duties is they stay at home and they are the head of the family.
Most of the women in my community own their own businesses and sell their own food. Some of them have convenience shops.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Two singers are traveling through the volatile English-speaking regions of Cameroon in hopes of ending a war that has killed more than 1,200 people. Their only weapon are a guitar and voices they use to spread the message of peace in song. Muki Edwin Kinzeka met with them in the English-speaking northwestern village of Santa and has this report.
I want to know, where have they gone to?
These are the voices of 24-year-old Emmanuel Bilashi and 31-year-old Linford C., singing in the northwest village of Santa. In the song, the two are calling on armed gangs to drop their weapons and stop attacking, killing, kidnapping, and destroying public buildings. They ask both the governments of Cameroon and the armed gangs to allow children to have their basic right to education.
We are tired of war, violence. Schools are locked up, our brothers and sisters are being killed every day, and things are not moving. Everywhere is just stagnant, and let them drop the weapons. Violence is not what we need, but peace and love.
You've made me a pillar for kingdom building, Lord. You've made me a material.
In this other song, the two say the best gift of life is love. Linford C. says even the fighters need love.
They are having consciousness and they are still having that soft spot in their heart for the love of the nation. We as young people, we want a future. We have a part to play like nation builders. We are telling ourselves that we don't want to be the leaders of tomorrow, but we want to be the leaders of today. If there is no platform of peace, then that dream of us or that reality of today, it is having no place.
Bilashi says they created the duo 4 months ago after violence in the northwest town of Bamenda killed one of C's family members and two of Bilashi's. Among the 23 people listening to them in Santa is 27-year-old Rigobert Kima. Kima says he recently fled from a camp of armed fighters near the northwest village of Bafut.
I opted to come, so the thing was not easy, but we just managed to escape from the bushes. We passed through Fringame, Bafut, before we came to Bamenda.
Unrest in the northwest and southwest regions began in 2016 when teachers and lawyers staged protests against what they called the marginalization of English speakers in this mostly French-speaking nation. The government says that since then, over 1,200 civilians, soldiers and armed separatists have been killed. Bilashi and C have performed in Santa, Bamenda, Akum, Nkwen, Bambili and Bambui. Many say the duo's initiative is courageous. Within the past 2 months, two missionaries, Charles Truman Wesco from the United States and Cosmas Ondari from Kenya, were killed in the restive regions where they were preaching peace. Mancho Ivo, an inhabitant of Akum, whose poultry business has been shut down by the fighting, listened to the duo and liked what he heard. He said he prays their message can heal Cameroon. He added, "We thank them for their courage, which may as well be the beginning of the solution to our problems." Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Santa, northwestern Cameroon.
Saturday was the World AIDS Day. It's a time set aside for grassroots activists, international aid agencies, and everyday people to rededicate themselves and their communities to a future with the virus controlled or even eradicated. VOA's Adam Phillips interviewed Chipango George, director of small Zambian non-profit.
There's a disease, a killer disease.
It's called HIV AIDS.
That's Together We Are Strong, a song composed and sung by grassroots activist Chipango George to promote AIDS awareness and activism in Zambia.
I believe in the power that music has. It's the quickest way of getting the message to people's hearts.
Together we can save the world.
George spends much of his time in remote rural areas working to help improve education for children who live far from the capital. One day, 4 years ago, he was at a village school doing outreach for his nonprofit, Building Futures, when he came across four young kids who needed extra support.
I was told they're orphaned and their parents had died a few years ago from AIDS. It was a touching moment for me. I couldn't do much but to just write a song about it and try and get the world to understand that HIV is real. Because the more we stay quiet about it, the more stronger it is becoming. And we're becoming weaker as a people. As an individual, I don't have the capacity on my own to be able to help them. Because HIV/AIDS is a big case. And not even a government alone can achieve it. It needs everybody else to just be a part of it if we're going to make the world AIDS-free. Because I feel if we fight together, we can end AIDS.
Despite significant progress in recent years, Zambia still has one of the world's highest HIV infection rates. According to UNICEF, in Western and Lusaka provinces, nearly 16% of the population is infected. George says this may be partly due to a lack of awareness in rural areas that it's AIDS, not witchcraft or so-called natural causes, that lies at the root of many otherwise unexplained deaths.
I'm trying to get them to understand that AIDS can actually destroy lives. I do appreciate organizations that have gone to such villages to try and sensitize people. But at the end of the day, it's not everybody that gets this information. These are people I'm trying to talk about.
In many traditional villages, it's taboo for young people to discuss sex in the presence of their elders. But George says there is a proper and accepted way the subject can be broached.
It's important, especially when there's an issue like HIV/AIDS, we have to discuss sex openly. But in these villages, speak to the adults and the young people at separate times.
Do people understand the connection between unprotected sex and transmission of the disease?
That is another thing that has to be dealt with. It's easy to say it, it's another thing to also do it. So right now, what's important is to encourage people to actually do what they hear, and not only to hear and do the opposite.
George says that even when people are diagnosed with the disease and are given medicine to control it, they sometimes neglect to take it as prescribed, or they don't take it at all. They can then infect others with the virus. And all too often, those with full-blown AIDS live in remote areas where access to affordable AIDS medication is poor. Indeed, that is how AIDS claimed two of George's beloved aunties during the 1990s.
If you listen to the song saying it's taken away loved ones, that is something personal. So I feel we have to stop AIDS from just destroying families. And if this was going to be achieved, togetherness is all that's needed. But on the personal point, I haven't done much on those children. But it's something I feel I should take seriously and not only sing about it, but be able to be practical about it and see to it that I can be able, with my little influence, get them support that I can.
Because together we are strong.
That is why, on this World AIDS Day, Chipango George continues his plan to expand the focus of his nonprofit to include rural youth who are living with AIDS or at risk for HIV infection or whose parents have been felled by the disease. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Together we can save the world. Because together we are strong.
From Zambia, we now move to South Sudan, where a medical officer in charge of the HIV and AIDS facility at Juba Teaching Hospital says the rate of HIV across South Sudan has dropped from this time last year, saying it now stands at 2.6% of the population. Winnie Chirino has this report for VOA from Juba.
Medical officer Benjamin Lokia says Juba Teaching Hospital offers voluntary counseling and screening programs for people who would like to know their HIV/AIDS status, and the hospital usually tests more than 1,100 people a month.
On a monthly basis in Juba Teaching Hospital, can go up to 1,000.
150. Like specifically for last month, we tested around 1,143 with 105 positive. That means the average of 286 persons are seen on a weekly basis. And out of that, 26 at least can be tested positive on a weekly basis. HIV is serious in South Sudan. South Sudan has got a lot of areas where you can reach. People cannot go there to do tests because of the crisis that had been in the country. Even some people in other areas, even they are not informed about HIV.
Dr. Moses Mutebi, a medical officer at World Health Organization in Juba, says although HIV-related deaths have dropped, new infections are registered every day in South Sudan. He says screening records in many facilities in South Sudan have revealed that 77% of people who go for testing are women. Mutebi says many South Sudanese men are hesitant to know their HIV status, and far too many finally get tested when it's too late.
We discussed the introduction of HIV self-testing, which has been one of our areas incorporated in this theme of know your status. It is happening in neighboring countries, but also we wanted to introduce this as a matter of policy dialogue. We haven't yet done this in South Sudan, but discussions are underway. When it comes to treatment, we have newer medicines that are coming up at the moment. Dolutegravir is one of the newer medicine that will be hopefully introduced in the year 2019.
Dr. Kadiang Modi is the HIV program specialist at the Ministry of Health. He says about 180,000 people are living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. He says his office does not have statistics on the areas where the virus is most prevalent in the country. He says there has been a significant drop in the number of infected persons in the former Western Equatorial State, which was once leading the country with 6% HIV/AIDS prevalence. Modi says the Minister of Health is creating awareness campaigns in South Sudan about the benefits of the new medicine, dolutegravir, which is expected to be available in August.
The fact remains that we are transitioning to something that is more easy to use, something that is more effective in treatment or treating our clients living with HIV, something that has got less kind of resistance issues, and something that also can be bought a little bit more cheaper. And the reason why we are going to start it by August next year is because it gives us time to prepare adequately for that transition to happen.
World AIDS Day, first marked internationally in 1988, is held on December 1st each year to raise awareness about the virus, for people to unite in the fight against HIV, and to honor the 35 million people worldwide who have died from an AIDS-related illness. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday, and we leave you with Benjamin Laxin singing about HIV/AIDS.
Siburas gowi yokti e Afta dan kukuwis Afta dan kukuwis Was mauta kum kabaradi Ayam de bele de makwis Ayam de dunya de mamot mun Fi amrat kuta
We've been listening to Benjamin Laxin warning South Sudanese about the dangers of HIV/AIDS. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.